Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back. We're back to talking about Magic cards, and man, oh man, oh man, is that an exciting episode.
So my one question for everyone is, do they like that I do the intro differently every time, or would they like me to be more consistent? That's not for you. That's for everyone else.
Okay, I won't answer.
Yeah.
Exactly. Wait, let me interrupt you. Oh, I have nothing to say.
That we said something.
Yeah.
That doesn't work when we're recording. Yeah. So I did that to Ben earlier, and he's now salty. But
he literally interrupted me and then stopped talking to think about what he wanted to say after.
Wait, let me interrupt you. So today we're talking about the Masters of Modern podcast. This is the modern podcast on the internet. We talk about modern things and all the great stuff of the best Magic the Gathering format, modern. I am Alex Kessler, and you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow Ben on Twitter. You can follow us on all these other places. But today we're talking about three color combinations, and specifically the ones that are underrepresented.
Yeah, the fringe ones. We've talked a lot about, obviously, Jund and Abzan and Grixis and Jeskai over the years, but we started thinking about there's been a real push and interest in both Mardu and Sultai, and to some degree, Temur and Esper, but we wanted to talk about what are the things that are holding each of those archetypes back from breaking into big time day twos and top eights. Because I know a lot of you guys have worked on these decks as kind of pet decks, and people have shared a lot of thoughts on the Facebook group, which, by the way, you should follow each of the Twitters Alex mentioned, at Cass Wiley, at Ben Bateman Media, and at the MMCast. You should also go check out the Facebook group. It's the Masters of Modern Facebook group. It's the coolest place in the world. We've got Hagen Kirk over there moderating it now, and it's got 2,000 people in it.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're going through some growing pains right now.
Yeah,
so,
that's unfortunate.
But which is great. It's awesome. Like, definitely go communicate with people there. It's really great.
There's like, if you ever want to get inspiration to build a cool deck, or just like see like what are people talking about, what are things people find interesting, you know, ranking one drops, any the conversations you guys have heard us talk about on here for like 300 hours, go and find the Facebook group, because I'll tell you guys, I get more inspiration to talk about subjects in Modern from that group than anywhere else. It's just 2,000 like-minded people talking about Modern. It's great. Anyway, guys, last but not least, you know, be sure to check out collected.company. That's where you can find our podcast, our sister podcast, The Command Zone. Jimmy and Josh, they do game nights as well on YouTube. They have a lot of great content out there. We do have a Patreon. One of the listeners on 10 Minutes of Modern asked me about that. We do plug it every show, but reminding everybody here, patreon.com/TheMMCast. That's how we bought the gear we're recording on. You're hearing us talk through.
It's true.
Literally right now. And then the very last plug, and I do this every show, but guys, this is a very special one because a lot's changed. There is a daily show called the 10 Minutes of Modern show on Anchor. And it's something that I had originally started doing as 10 Minutes of Magic. And it's basically Twitter meets podcasting. It's now become Daily Modern Contents, the official Anchor station of the Masters of Modern. And the numbers are starting to grow, and the people that make the app are noticing. And they're telling us that if we get those numbers up, so if you listen to the content through the app, not through links, but you actually listen to the app, they're going to start giving us stuff to give away, actual Modern staples. And I think in December, I'm going to be giving stuff away.
Can I win stuff?
If you want to call in. Okay. You've never called in, you traitor.
Have I not? No, you call me.
Well, it's your station now, too.
Yeah.
You get to be the other name on it, so you don't have
I
to
get
call
called.
In. Yeah.
I don't call people. They call me.
But anyway, guys, yeah, that's the thing is if you download Anchor.fm and you call in and you keep supporting the station, we're going to like just start giving away Modern staples. Like December is going to be filled with Modern staples. So do that because it helps keep the thing going. Anyways, I think those are all the plugs, all the shout outs, all the things. Right.
You everyone keep an eye out, and if you want to go check out for specifically, we sold two things to ThinkGeek.com, my game company that Ben works for and I started last year. And the first one was Emergent Genesis. If you are familiar with Brian David Marshall, you can see him right now on the Magic Pro Tour on Twitch.tv. P.S. The Magic Pro Tour is happening today. And he released a game a year ago called Emergent Genesis, and it's currently at ThinkDeek.com. It's a superhero deck building game where you get to build your own superhero, create your own. You get a mentor. It's kind of like Commander meets Ascension. And then the other one is Super Party Battle, which should be up very soon. Keep an eye out and keep an eye out on our social media for when we release it. It's a party game that plays kind of like Magic the Gathering meets a college campus where you're recruiting different stereotypes at cliques on campus, and there's demons running the school, and you're trying to throw the best party and have a good time. So check both of those things out and keep an eye out for Super Party Battle because they're going to be super awesome.
Sick.
On ThinkGeek.com.
Cool.
All right. Now.
Let's get into it.
Today's episode. So what are three color combinations, Ben?
Three color combinations are, well, three color combinations. the way we think about three color combinations in Magic is that it's not just decks that are necessarily playing three colors in their 75. It's decks that are specifically making the choice to play a third color rather than just two based on the reach that that color gives them in a combination of probably main deck and sideboard cards. And they tend to be mid-range decks because even though like Naya decks have been aggressive and burny and stuff, that's one strategy and that's how Naya plays.
And I think it, the way to really, you know, Modern has always been defined by these three color decks. And part of that is it's they're kind of the inherent place to go to with the mana bases of Modern being based on Shockland, Fetchlands.
Yep.
So going above three colors has always been really difficult because the life loss is really problematic. And there's no real cost to go to three colors from two colors. And as soon as you jump to three colors, that opens up your sideboard slots, that opens up the different powerful engine cards you can play on your deck, that lets you splash different effective removal spells. So there's no real reason not to be three colors in Modern. And you'll notice that there's been very few two-color decks that have been super successful, partly just because you don't need to be two colors, and the ones that are generally doing so because there's a colorless land that they're playing or there's some part of their mana base that makes it much more difficult for them to go up in mana sources. And so because of that, so much of the format has been defined that. And those strategies generally lean towards good stuff decks because you can play three different colors. Why not just play the best spells in all three of those colors?
Yeah, that's definitely where it leans. Good stuff decks are everywhere. And so, you know, the most prominent three in Modern's history, I mean, ever the most prominent three are definitely Abzan, Jund, and Jeskai. Grixis in the last year and a half.
In Modern,
really come on the scene, and I would say has really kind of kicked Jeskai out of that spot. But
not according to the SCG event from last week. There's like four Jeskai decks, but
I think Jeskai's gotten good recently because control is good right now.
I think the top four have classically been those four, and then if you wanted to throw a fifth, it would be Naya.
I would see
Abzan, Jund, Naya,
Grixis,
and Jeskai.
Yep,
are the five most played three color combinations in Modern history, and Naya being mostly represented over the last 2 years by Burn, though collected company Naya decks were definitely a thing. Big Naya decks were a thing early in the format. Zoo has always kind of been in and out depending on which day of the week it was.
I would say six is probably Bant, and that's based on the fact that you have a Bant Eldrazi deck that's been good. You had versions of Infect that were Bant at one point, and you also have Bant Nightfall now.
Yep.
And seven is, or yeah.
And then there's Bant Collected Company decks that have just been around forever.
Yeah, and I think seven is probably Teemer, because there was like at least a few Teemer decks over the years that have been good.
Scapeshift Teemer decks have always been kind of thing. And we'll break down each color combination really quickly for everyone in a second, because I realize we're just talking about colors. And if you don't know what the names are for the three color combinations, I definitely recommend looking it up.
Yes.
This episode will be very hard to understand if you don't know that Teemer is blue, red, green, and Grixis is black, red, blue.
Right.
And we're definitely going to get, like, you know, especially in the bottom three, there's going to be some colors that even if you're familiar with Modern, you know what Jund is, but you might not know what Mardumi is or Sultai is. So, or Teemer specifically, because Teemer and Sultai specifically are referencing color combinations that have had good names.
Yep.
So like Bug
and Rug
because of the color combination. So sometimes people don't know that. But yeah, so after that Teemer, you know, you had the Scapeshift decks that until Titan Shift kind of started being a thing were the main go-to team, you know, way of playing Scapeshift.
And you had versions of Delver over the years and there was Teemer Twin decks for a long time.
And I would say the Teemer Twin decks and the Scapeshift decks have been the two classic versions of this.
Yeah.
Though Eternal Command decks would probably be my
favorite.
Like fourth place, but my favorite of those.
I mean, that's a real deck people have played over the years.
Well,
but
now they're playing now it's Sultai,
which is
I think the next, or no, we'll get into that. But Sultai, where they are playing the new pirate.
Yes. Yes.
Where it comes into play and exiles a thing, and then you can cast it later.
Yeah, that's fucking sick.
After that, I would say it's probably Esper.
Yeah.
After Teemer, where Esper has never really been
blue, black, white.
Yeah, there's never really been a defining color combination for Esper. There's never been a defining deck for it. There's been different decks that have played Esper. There was Esper Death Shadow. There's been Grixis Death. I'm not sorry. Esper Planeswalker decks.
Esper Tokens.
Esper Gifts Ungiven decks. But
Esper Mentor. People have tried to make that work for a long time.
It's never really been able to define itself as what it was kind of doing, like the other colors that we mentioned. And then last but not least is.
There's
two more. Sorry. Last but not least are two color combinations. next, I would say, is probably Mardu over Sultai. And with Mardu being red, black, white. And just because there's been Aristocrat decks, there's been Burn decks that were modern. There's a period where instead of being Naya, they were Burn before Colligan's Command was printed because they were playing the flashback black and red spell and
Bump in the Night.
And Bob, a Dark Confidant on the deck. And. Then you get the Sultai, which has just never really found a real footing in the format.
Found a home.
Some of that is a common, and we're going to talk specifically about these bottom three a lot today, and Sultai, I have very specific reasons why I think it has had problems, and do you want to just get into it?
I think we should just jump straight into it. So here's what I think we do. I think step one of this is to acknowledge that we're really going to focus on the bottom three today. We're going to focus on Esper, Sultai, and Mardu. And I think the idea here is that if you guys have tried building with these decks before and you've run into trouble, we want to try to identify what we think each deck is missing and what are the best few options to make it work. So I say we start with Esper because it's the eighth place one for us, and we talk about what Esper decks have looked like and what they're missing and what we think they could have, what's out there. So in my opinion, right off the bat, I think Esper feels like a blue deck. It feels like a blue mid-range deck in the same way that Jeskai does. It makes sense because it plays two of the same colors, but it is somewhere between wanting to play a sorcery game plan and a flash game plan.
Yeah, well, it's like blue-white in the format has classically been very instant speed driven.
Yep.
Snapcaster Mage and Path to Exile being such a brutal combination together, plus just Snapcaster Mage in general being such an instant speed focus for blue, and white being able to supplement that with cards that are comparable, made that kind of work together. But then black is defined by sorcery speed spells. You have Thoughtseize, you have Inquisition of Kozilek, you have Collective Brutality. And so with that kind of dichotomy, and add on top of that the layer that the best black-white spell in the format is Lingering Souls, really puts Esper into a jam. And do you want to be a sorcery speed version of the deck? And if you're going to be that, why then not just play Abzan? Or are you going to be an instant speed version of the deck? And if you're going to be that, why not just play Lightning Bolt?
Exactly. And that's what the deck looks like. You just described kind of in a nutshell what Esper decks. Now, you have tried to build more Esper decks than most people I know. You've tried a lot of different versions.
Tolaria West is the best.
Yeah. And there's interesting things you can try to do. You know, I mean, one direction you can go is to take Esper in the combo direction and play the Sword of the Meek combo in there. It lends itself well because of the colors involved and the fact that you do have Steel Shaper's Gift available, so you can kind of get there. But at the end of the day, what this deck really feels like is it needs to be a hard tap-out control deck. It either has to be a hard tap-out control deck, or you need to not worry about Lingering Souls as anything other than probably the card you'll win the game with. It has to be basically your finisher, and you just play 100% the control game plan. But if you're going to do that, then it kind of just starts to feel like you're playing a Jeskai deck with worse cards.
Right. And that's why you need to look at what, and that's the hardest conversation with this entire episode is, why am I doing this over other color combinations? And in Esper, so far, the really two different angles that I've seen that encourage you to have to be in this color combination, one is Gifts Ungiven with Unburial Rites.
Yep.
The problem just hasn't never been good enough. And for whatever reason, you know, that's just always going to be an issue. And then the other one is taking advantage of Lingering Souls and different value options. And personally, my favorite is Thought Scour and Lingering Souls. So like those two color combinations, those two cards together force you into Esper. There's a reason to be there. And that's a powerful combination. Then you get the play Tastiger. Then you get the play different ways to take advantage of the fact that, and you play Collective Brutality. And there's just different ways that kind of really push Lingering Souls to the farthest level. And blue does offer tools to take advantage of that. And if that's the way to go about it, that makes sense.
So my suggestions would be,
play spirits.
I think the strongest thing you can do in Esper, if you really are trying to do something that no other color combination is going to do as well, is to go hard into Planeswalkers. I think you play a Planeswalker deck. And that, and the reason is because I think those three colors in Modern do represent the best Planeswalkers. The green and the red walkers are fine, but they're nowhere near as good as the blue, the white, and the black.
I think green is the most underrated, and red has the 4-mana Chandra with 4 abilities.
I mean, they're both good. I'm just saying, like, in terms of CMC versus Impact, you can build the most interesting deck in an Esper Walkers deck that the other ones are not able to take advantage of.
100%.
And I also think that it lends itself very well to a sorcery game plan with cards like Lingering Souls because they protect your walkers so well. So I think that that's probably the smartest thing to do.
I mean, the combination of the 3-mana Gideon and 3-mana Liliana, or both 3-mana Lilianas.
Yep.
And just 4-mana, the Jace Architect of Thought, and just a few other good walkers in those colors is just a really powerful combination. Not to mention now with Gideon Tribal. Esper Gideon Tribal is something that's really powerful, and it is the reason behind that in Esper more than maybe Jeskai is because the tap-out function of Planeswalkers allows you to capitalize on the sorcery speed black spells that you want to be capitalizing on.
Yeah, the other one that I think people probably don't pay enough close enough attention to, and it still does kind of fit into the Planeswalker game plan, is Esper's a great place to play Bitter Blossom. It's a really good place to start with Blossom on turn two. It's I would say of these decks, it's probably the one that you want that the most, because
you can lean into the with Lingering Souls and
Bitter Blossom,
you have this really strong token theme. It makes you really, like, there are decks that will just wreck you. If anyone plays Pyroclasm, you're just a sad panda.
Yep.
And the problem with Bitter Blossom in Esper decks classically is mostly the life loss issue, where if you're capitalizing on going long, Bitter Blossom can be a liability.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there was an easy suggestion here, then Esper would be a better deck than it is.
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah. No. These are the problems. I mean, I think the best thing that happened to Esper would be Stoneforge Mystic being unbanned.
Yeah, and that would be great. That would be great. And I think if Stoneforge Mystic got unbanned, you would absolutely lean into the Sword of the Meek plan, because, like, how could you not?
I don't know. The problem with Sword of the Meek plans are both pieces of that combo are A, hard to find, and B, not that good without the other half.
Oh, I just think if you were going to play an Esper deck and you had access to Stoneforge Mystic where you didn't have to play Steel Shaper's Gift anymore in the deck, you were just playing a good card and you played like two copies of Sword of the Meek or something like that, plus your Batterskulls, how do you not just like, that seems...
I want to cast Thoughtseize, then cast Stoneforge Mystic, searching for Sword of Feast and Famine, then on turn three have Counterspell and or flash it in.
So
that's what I want to do.
I think the last card to point out here that is unique that I have seen people toy around with and I think is cool is Ashiok.
Yeah.
I think Ashiok historically has been one of the underplayed powerhouses in Modern. That card's good. Card does a lot of good things. It gets big really fast, and I think it's difficult for people to interact with if you play it at the right time. And I definitely think that Ashiok is a card worth paying attention to. So my big suggestion to those listening who want to try out Esper: look at Ashiok and try to figure out what's the best thing you can be doing there, because in my opinion, that's one of the missing pieces.
Speaking of which.
Yep.
Are we done with Esper?
Yeah.
Can we go to Saltai?
Definitely.
Cool. Todd Stevens, writer for SEG, pro player, literally just wrote an article on Star City Games. It's on the premium side, so make sure to go pay for premium SEG, et cetera, et cetera. But he just released an article talking about Saltai, and one of the ideas he had was specifically a Saltai Planeswalker deck with Ashiok.
Ashiok's good.
Ashiok, Liliana, Nyssa, blue-green one that you like.
Yeah, I love that card.
And Nyssa, 3-mana one that makes plant tokens and other cards.
Yeah, I mean, I read that article.
So I do think we talked to Esper as a really strong play because of really the existence of Gideon for being the Planeswalker deck, but I actually think in the last 5 years, there's been a real push to make green also have a pretty strong Planeswalker list. You have those two Nissas we mentioned in blue-green. You have the original Garruk, which I think is still one of the most underrated Planeswalkers of all time. There's a lot of power in those colors now with Liliana and now with blue. So I think that's definitely another angle you can go after here. But with Saltai, I think, you know, you mentioned before, what is it missing? What could we have in the deck? And I think we got some of that. I think with Fatal Push, with black being able to be the removal spell color, because the biggest problem with this deck classically was you have the threats because you have Tarmogoyf, you have Bob, you even have Snapcaster Mage. So it's you have the three best two drops in the format available to you. You know, white doesn't have its two drop and red doesn't. So it's not a lacking of two drops that this deck has. What the issue was removal. Without Path and without Lightning Bolt, this deck couldn't kill things. And now with Fatal Push and Collective Brutality and Abrupt Decay, that's a removal suite that really can handle pretty much most things you're going to really need to be worrying about, plus Maelstrom Pulse for bigger things. The removal issue is no longer the problem. But as soon as we got that good removal suite, Graveyard Hate decided to just rear its ugly head, forcing Tarmogoyf to no longer be that good.
Yeah. I mean, let's break down exactly the difference between, say, Sultai and the other two big black-green X decks, because people have some inkling in their head, well, this is a black-green X deck that's playing the best blue card in the entire format, so how does it not just be better? Like, how is it not just good? And what you just said makes sense. You know, you could, there's interesting stuff you can do. The problem is the green decks historically have taken advantage of your great two drops, right? Like you just said. So, and this deck, if you're going to make room for, let's just say, bare minimum, four Snapcaster Mages and maybe like, I don't know, like four, let's just say you made room for like four Serum Visions and that's what you were doing.
I would play, well, okay.
Or Opt or something. Whatever. But like you're maybe eight to 10 cards. What ends up happening is like you still kind of want to be a tap out deck like the others would be. Like you want to be a mid-range deck, but you're trying to, like, Snapcaster Mage gets a little less good if you're not playing at an instant speed, and it's not that advantageous to just like flash back the spells in your deck anymore, because it feels like you could be doing something so much better with the other black green X decks. You don't actually get as much reach just by adding blue as I think people would want. You do get Creeping Tar Pit, which is really powerful.
Sure. And part of it is also look at what Jund and Abzan do and why they would see play more than Sultai. Jund gets Lightning Bolt and it gets Raging Ravine, which means it has a better reach game plan.
Yep.
It's going to kill their opponent better than other decks are going to play it. And that's just a big deal. Being able to get reach with Lightning Bolt, being able to just top deck a Lightning Bolt and kill them. Having Raging Ravine, which is the second, if not the second best man land after Celestial
Snapping
Colonnade.
A Fatal Push is great. That's exciting. And
sure,
that's...
but that like killing, removing people is something, but like now Jund has Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push available to it, and Junk has Fatal Push and Path available.
And Grixis can bolt snap bolts, you just like Jeskai
right.
can.
And then if you look at Abzan is better at grinding because of Lingering Souls. You have these double threats. Every card you're playing kind of does two things, and it has Township. So both of those decks are doing this one specific thing. And then you look at Sultai, and the blue-green Hexproof Manland is fine, but not that exciting because it just gets stopped by everything. The black-blue, the Creeping Tar Pit, which is probably the best one of the choices here, is killed by everything.
So let's talk about what we think Sultai needs to establish its own identity. The first one for me is I think people have to realize that playing Jace Vryn's Prodigy is better than playing Snapcaster Mage in a Sultai deck. That's my first thought. I think it actually makes more sense on game plan. I don't think you gain very much by Snapcaster Mage being instant speed. There is some interaction there, so maybe you play one Snapcaster, but I think the biggest thing to lean into is that Vryn's Prodigy is what this deck wants. It represents the card selection that you're effectively playing Snapcaster Mage and Serum Visions to get anyway, not to mention you also get the flashback, and it's defensive. And it just, to me, it just feels like you don't, you want to be able to play a two-drop on turn two in this deck. You don't want to hold back your Snapcaster Mage to flash back a piece of removal or a Serum Visions. That's not that powerful.
Sure.
Vryn's Prodigy is a lot more powerful in a Sultai deck.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I do think there's a difference between on turn three being able to do the thing you want to do immediately, especially because what I would put in Sultai are mostly one drops that we wanted to flash back with Snapcaster Mage versus having to wait for a Jace to turn on. I think you want some type of five card split between the two of a 2-3 or a 3-2, depending on
let me give you another
of.
Scenario that I think makes Vryn's Prodigy so much better. All right, so turn one you Thoughtseize your opponent, right? Both decks probably the same thing.
Sure.
Turn two, You either play something else, or Snapcast or whatever, you're not going to flash anything back with, or you play Vryn's Prodigy, and on turn three, when you then flip it, because you will, because you're playing Thought Scours and all kinds of things like that, and fetch lands and whatnot, you'll flip it, and you'll flash back your Thoughtseize on turn three for one mana. And, like, all of a sudden, your game is so much sweeter. Like, that's a real thing you should be doing.
Well, but on turn three, yes. And you have the one drop, and then you can play a two drop. I'm not saying Jace isn't good. And I think you should play both, is what I'm basically recommending.
Yeah.
I think what the real deck needs is it needs a focused game plan. And I think Sultai is the best Illyrium deck in, possibly in Modern.
Yeah.
I think the fact that with the new search for
Azkaban?
I think that is what it is.
Azkaban?
Azkanta. The blue, yeah, the blue flip enchantment.
So that was going to be my number two
for cards to add. Right.
Right.
And then you add the ability to either off of Snapcaster Mage or Jace, and I think you want both, because I think you want variety here, to flashback Traverse the Uvenwald is extremely powerful. Being able to play Thought Scour and being able to play Grim Flayer as bigger threats in this deck is very powerful. And you can decide which, if you want to play, go a Grixis Death Shadow way, where you're playing Death Shadows as your other main thing, playing Tarmogoyf. There's different ways you can kind of pick your threat density, but I think the Delirium game plan on the other sides of those cards does a lot of powerful things. Now, the problem is that because Graveyard Hate is so strong in the format right now, does that limit what the deck's able to do?
Yeah, I think it does a little bit. I think a lot of the best things you're talking about are extremely graveyard dependent in a way that the other mid-range decks aren't, but I do think that this is a great opportunity to play a Traverse deck. Probably this is a perfectly reasonable deck to play two copies of Bitter Blossom in with the Jaces, so you could discard one of them early to turn on your Delirium like immediately. Like having those as possible cards to throw into your graveyard seems totally reasonable. Not to mention they're good on turn two. So I think this plays more like a control deck than a mid-range deck. That's what I think. And I think the last thing to consider adding here, and this is just a personal opinion thing, I've been talking about this a lot recently, is look at the green Delve spells and figure out, like, so I know that Mandrills is not better than the black ones. They're better. They're bigger. But I do think that Trample's underrated. And then more interestingly is if you're going to have tokens or you're going to have, like, and you know, just whatever you're crushing through with, what maybe it's Creeping Tar Pit, maybe try out, like, one or two copies of Become Immense in this deck, because I think if you're trying to grind it out and strip your opponent's hand, there's something to be said for just like six damage out of the blue. This is a really good Delve deck, and that card, people think about that card as an all-in Stompy or an Infect card, when in reality it's just a one mana burn spell in the right situation. Like, that's what it is. It's six damage for one green in most situations, and you don't have to be playing it in an Infect deck for that to be good. You know, most control decks would love to have one red, six damage to the dome, right? Like,
sure.
So I think that's an interesting card that people don't... you don't want to play more than probably two, maybe even just
one. I think
you
play one, yeah.
But I think it's a pretty clever one of.
No, and it on a Grim Flayer, there's a bunch of things in this deck that I think that would work well with, because you're putting stuff in your graveyard and then you have the ability to then pump things that have Trample. I think Grim Flayer is just better than Hooting Mandrills. I think the Trample you're looking for, it becomes a 4-4 very quickly in what this deck is trying to do. And if you really want to go on the Delve plan, playing with A, Delve is bad with Delirium. They don't really get along.
True.
And yes, if with Become Immense and you're just killing a person, I'll take killing a person to Delve some stuff away. But with Hooting Mandrills, if you're playing black, I don't think you either want the beef of being a one-drop 5/5 or a one-drop 4/5 that has an extra ability, or you want Grim Flayer that just is going to do more because it lets you put more stuff in your graveyard and lets you cycle and lets you kind of stack the top of your deck.
I mean, not to mention the fact that, you know, Tassigar is built to be in a Sultai deck, like, through and through and through.
Yeah. It's literally those colors.
So let's move on to the last one.
Sure.
Let's move on to our final color combination. And this is, I think, the one
worst color in Modern.
And seemingly the color combination people are the most excited about talking about. There's so much buzz on that group. Somebody posted a thread in the last day or two about Mardu, and I checked this morning, and there was like 168 comments. People just want to talk about Mardu. Yeah. I posted an episode on 10 Minutes of Modern yesterday, and it got like a significantly larger number of listens than most things do. People want to talk about Mardu. So let's first and foremost identify exactly what's missing in Mardu. And this one I've talked about a lot, so I'll just launch straight into it. We talk about the black-green X decks. We talk about the two-drop power that you get in green and what Tarmogoyf and Scavenging Ooze and Grim Flayer and the cards like that give you.
Mm-hmm.
What this deck is ultimately missing, because it has all of the interaction in the colors, right? It has great one-drop interaction between Thoughtseize, Fatal Push, Lightning Bolt, Path to Exile.
It has the best. Not even getting the sideboards, it has the best removal.
It has great interaction. Tons of interaction. Yep. The problem is,
Lingering
the deck
Souls
doesn't
on top of it
have the threats.
Right.
It's missing the two drop threats that push it into the next chapter of what would be good. And so let's just go over what are some of the best options you can be playing in the two drop slot in a Mardu deck. The most popular one is Young Pyromancer. That's the one that people try the most.
True. And the problem with Young Pyromancer, and this is my problem whenever it comes up as the fifth two drop, the red one, is like it's actually, it's powerful, but it's not that powerful. It's not something like you have to deal with it once it comes into play, but if you don't, and but if you have any type of blocker, you just kind of win. And it's not doing enough in the deck than it wants to. I think that it's just not enough raw power. If I were to pick anything, I'd pick Death Shadow over it and or other combinations of colors. The one nice thing is it does go really well with stuff like Lingering Souls.
I agree. It plays well with Lingering Souls, and I definitely think that there are, I mean, there were versions of Pyromancer decks that you could have made work here with Gitaxian Probe, but Probe's gone.
Right. And then on the 28th, there was a competitive Modern League, so the a five-man whatever. But the Mardu deck that placed, it's the one Mardu deck currently that's placed recently, had two Monastery Swift Spears, four Young Pyromancer, four Bedlam Reveler, and then Burst Lightning, Faithless Looting, Forked Bolt, Inquisition of Kozilek, Lightning Bolt, Lingering Souls, Culligan's Command. So it was just literally just using all of the removal and spells that this has ability on main deck Blood Moon, with the fact that Young Pyromancer and Bedlam Reveler and Monastery Swift Spear let you kind of chain those and take a real advantage of it. So it was really almost a Jeskai feeling black-red deck.
So the other card that it's missing the most that would be great is Stoneforge Mystic. Stoneforge Mystic, I think, to me, is that's the card that would make Mardu... Like, I think if Stoneforge Mystic got unbanned, I think Mardu would immediately become... It would just immediately become a deck.
I think it becomes a deck. I don't think it... I think it might have a similar problem that, like, we kind of discussed with Saltai, where... Because Saltai has access to Tarmogoyf, Snapcaster Mage, and Bob. But, you know, the issue there is... Does it take advantage of those cards better than other colors? I don't know if Mardu would over Stoneforge Mystic.
Which gets the bigger boost, Mardu or Esper, if Stoneforge gets unbanned?
Stoneforge Mystic is much better with counter magic than it is with sorcery speed stuff. So the fact that you can play Snapcaster Mage and then hold up counter magic and then flash something in at the end of turn, or you can hold up mana, or once you get Feast and Famine in the play, you can start untapping your lands to keep counter magic up. It just does more things at instant speed, and Mardu doesn't take advantage of that as well. Not to say that Mardu wouldn't be good with Stoneforge Mystic, and I think it would place more than it currently is, for sure. But I think the choice there is harder.
Gotcha. So then, let's talk about the other options that would fit into a Mardu deck. Glory Chaser, Glory Bound Initiate? Is that the name?
That's the 3/1 that if you exert it, it becomes a 4/4 with lifelink. Yeah.
Because somebody had tried playing a version of that in Modern, so I think it was an Esper deck. People were messing around with that card in. There was like a top 8 at a Grand Prix, and somebody was playing an Esper deck with it.
It's seen some play.
And the reason was because it mitigated the life loss that you would experience from, Bob and from Painful Truths. You draw a ton of cards. And I definitely think that there's probably space to explore with a Mardu deck in terms of trying out different two drops. I think people probably haven't been as creative as they should be. So Glorybound Initiate is definitely another one to consider. But to me, that's the big one, is that I think if you could figure out the correct combination of two drops to fit into the deck, then I do think Mardu could rise up the ranks. Because the interaction in Mardu is so strong that it's hard to not look at it and just say, like, how do you lose when you can play this many pieces of like incredible hand disruption and burn and removal?
And I think that might be one of its biggest issues, is it doesn't have a good way to draw into that content, Bob being the best one probably.
Yeah, right.
And so that's an issue. But I also think people probably overplay the good removal they have available. When you have so many good choices as far as removal goes and so low of threat density, you run into a problem where you really have an issue. It is the color combination I also think that is most hurt by not having a good man land. Like, your choices are the black red one, which I do think is a little underrated. I've like wrecked people with that card, but it's also not good.
The white black one's fine.
The white black one is fine, but it's not gonna. It's like a stabilizing man land, not a I'm gonna kill you man land. And the double strike one is bad.
Yeah, it's too expensive.
It's too expensive, doesn't kill him quick enough, and it dies to everything. So, like, your three man land choices are all not able to raise you above the level you need to be raised above. And so because of that, it kind of just is stuck in this, like, my late game, if I run out of spells because of my removal spells, I have no way to kill them. So, like, the parody that Jund thrives on, where it wants to be top decking because every land it draws is also a threat, doesn't exist for the deck. And on top of that, it doesn't have any creatures really that do well at killing people, because it doesn't have Tarmogoyf. It has Death Shadow, which it can get away with. It has Young Pyromancer, but we've discussed that the token strategy seems to be weaker than people give it credit for. And the reason Abzan does so well with token strategy is because it goes both ways. You know, yeah. We've always said you want to be able to, one of the strengths of Affinity is this as well, you want to be able to pivot between doing a piercing strategy or a wide strategy, and if the only thing Mardu has available to it is just, I'm going to go wide, it loses the value of being able to pivot.
Yeah, I also think you can find, like, a super, super interesting point of view if you look at the white-red prison decks, because I basically feel like if I think about what I want if I'm playing this color combination, you actually don't get that much by playing black. You're better off stripping your deck of the extra removal, the Dark Confidants, and the Hand Disruption, and just playing a white-red prison deck.
Sure.
Because it's the same mid-range strategy. You get to play cards like a Johnny Vengeance that you would want to play anyway, but instead of playing, like, Hand Disruption, you're playing Chalice of the Void, and you're playing Blood Moon, and all of a sudden you can... And that's better. It's just a better use of a mid-range deck that's playing white and red than, I think, Mardu.
Right.
So, you know, I think what it really comes down to is you need to have a faster clock. You need to have something better that's going to support all of your 16 pieces of interaction you're probably playing in the main deck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Mardu ultimately needs to break through.
Yeah, I agree.
So which of these three decks do you expect 6 months from now to be on the radar as a top-tier deck? What's the most likely?
In 6 months?
Yeah.
I think Sultai is the closest to doing it right now. I think Mardu has had decent showings recently, so it's possible. And I think Gifts was very much benefited by the Planeswalker rule change. So they all have different reasons to kind of do well. My reasoning for why I think Sultai is having problems is Graveyard Hate. I don't think that's going away. So it's between Mardu and I'm assuming no unbannings that affect any of these three. I'm going to go with Mardu. I think it has the most... It has... Of these three, it can do something different. Like, there are just... Someone might come up with some combo deck or an Aristocrats deck or doing something different with the color combination. This Bedlam Reveler, Young Pyromancer spell, Prowess deck that just does something different than what the other color combinations are doing, because that's really the point. A lot of what we described is doing the same but differently, and you need to find a benefit from doing the same and differently.
Exactly.
But... Like, I've described 100, you know, we've talked about with when we did the five colors, and we were wrong when we didn't mention Storm with red, but red is so good at combos that a Grizzle brand deck that is taking advantage of Mardu colors versus Grixis or other color combinations could just show up. You know, there's just different things Mardu could be doing that are really powerful, and it has just the best removal, and there's always going to be new threats that printed, but there's not going to be new removal that's printed very often. The chances of getting a Fatal Push
level card
is so much lower than getting a Tarmogoyf level card.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, actually, no, that's not really true.
Tarmogoyf is obviously the top end of that.
That's a tough example. Like, yeah, like a Grimflare level card.
Grimflare. Yeah. Like, think about the amount of 2-drop threats or even 1-drop threats. Like, look at the Delve cards. Look at, there's a bunch of new threats that keep getting printed. If you look at the threat base 5 years ago and the threat base now, totally different.
If you look at the removal base 5 years ago versus now, it's like basically Fatal Push is the
difference. No. I mean, there is increase, like Fatal Push, Call Against Command, and Collective Brutality, but all of those are in Mardu. So, like,
and only one of those is a true staple four of
what Mardu is missing is a threat, and there are a ton of different ways for Mardu to get a threat printed into it. It's not missing removal spells, and it has the best of the removal suite available. So I don't see
by far,
I don't see that being an issue for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with you. My answer to that question, if you were to ask me the same one, would have to be Sultai. And it's close to Esper, because I think that the code to crack on Esper is a Walker's deck. We don't have a dominant Walker's deck in Modern right now. It's hard to believe that with the rules change and they continue printing these Planeswalkers, that eventually somebody's not going to just, like, strike gold with, like, an 8 Planeswalker all interaction deck.
Yeah, I think Esper and Sultai are both on the verge of just being there already. I think, like, Sultai got you know, we just were a GP away from one of them doing well, where like Saltai got at as Kanta and it got other things, and then Esper got the Planeswalker rule change, and I think Mardu is the closest from just getting a card printed that just puts it into the top tier.
Yeah, I think so. My final answer there would have to be Saltai. And the biggest reason for me saying Saltai is that what I was saying on here about playing Vryn's Prodigy and the Azcanta card, I think that's just good now. I think like the right. stuff that, you know, you said Todd was writing about, like I think that stuff is all really interesting, and I think there's space to play in, and it feels like it's taking advantage of the things in Modern that are powerful already. It doesn't feel like it's far from it, and I could start to just see what we're missing for the Saltai deck to break through is somebody has to figure out an interaction that is predatory to the metagame that is coming specifically from a Saltai deck. Like an interaction between a blue card and a green card. You know, the interaction that you're getting. Something like a combo we didn't realize was accessible by playing like Snapcaster and Traverse or something like that.
Sure.
Where you're like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna slice these eight cards from over here that are a little counterintuitive, but it's particularly good against the metagame and it locks my opponent out, and that catches on, and all of a sudden that's the thing. I think that's how it would become a tier one deck, is like somebody would figure out, at least for right now in this metagame, this interaction is worth doubling down on.
I mean, it has the second best tutor in the format, if not the best.
Traverse?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I think, and I always forget the name of it because I'm tired.
Court of Calling
is the best tutor in the format.
Yeah,
Creature tutor.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting place to be, and I'm excited to see if any of them kind of make it.
Yeah. So I think that pretty much does it. I think that pretty much wraps up our discussion of those three color combinations. As always, guys, thanks for listening to 10 Minutes of Modern here on Anchor. This is not 10 Minutes of Modern.
Yeah, no, that was wrong. Was that a Freudian slip or a subtle plug?
That was definitely a Freudian slip. I'm tired. You didn't catch it earlier, but when you introduced the station, the podcast, you just stole my line.
I do that now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's a good line.
Yeah, good. Thank you. I think I'm tired.
Depends like what you complimented me. What?
this is definitely the Masters of Modern podcast, not 10 Minutes of Modern.
Yes.
And thank you for listening, because you guys are what keep us in business.
Yeah. And you know, as Ben subtly put it, make sure to check out his Anchor station. He does 10 Minutes of Magic
really
every
our
day.
Anchor station.
Something he's going to start doing also is taking his favorite video, favorite little thing from every day, and start posting it onto the YouTube channel that we kind of were posting on before, and we need to be better at. And this is, I think, a cool way for we to start posting content there. So that's another place to go check it out.
And also, people had asked for a while about why I wasn't posting the episodes to the podcast feed, and I was lazy. And the last two or three weeks, I've done it now again, and it's been glorious. And people seem to have loved it because they can go back and they can listen to old episodes.
Right.
And it's available. They publish it through an RSS feed. It's available through Google Play and through the Apple Store and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can find it everywhere.
And once again, make sure to go to ThinkGeek, check out Emergent Genesis, look up for a Super Party Battle, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
We are at the MM Cast. Make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. They are at The Command Cast on Twitter, but you can find both of us at collected.company, not like at symbol collected.company, but the website www.collected.company.
Yep.
You can have a website with a dot company instead of a dot com at the end.
It's pretty cool.
Who knew?
Yeah.
And make sure to check out the Patreon. It is how we do all of this. It's how the equipment we have is owned. It's how, you know, our next step is we're going to invest in equipment. Because we travel so much and we missed so many episodes this last month, we've taken a real hard look and see how to do this while both of us are traveling. So the next step for us is to get equipment to do that. So we really appreciate any donations on there. We will talk to you guys next week. Have fun watching the Pro Tour. I'm super excited, even though it's not modern, it's standard. But let's see how they do. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, guys.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.